This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Stretch by Torres, the set, the kick, and the pitch. It's deep to left field. This one may be off the wall, maybe in the screen.
Lang and Chernyshev on top as expected. They're eligible for Salt Lake City.
To Indian All-Star.
All right, Bill Black here with the Indian All-Stars podcast. I have the pleasure today of speaking with Phil Barber, the longtime, well-experienced journalist for the Press Democrat in Santa Rosa, California. We're going to talk about a overlooked Native American athlete who needs to be brought more to prominence. And Bill has done some extensive research for an article. It's a little while ago, but it's my pleasure to welcome you to the Indian All-Stars podcast, Phil. And please, if you want to flesh out any more of the introduction, please do, because I don't do those very well.
No, that's fine. I have to say, Bill, kind of a dirty trick to have me on to talk about a story I wrote 11 years ago. Sometimes I can't remember something I wrote 3 weeks ago, but that Phil Jordan was such a fascinating topic that I was kind of happy to sort of go back into my notes and refresh my memory a little bit. So yeah, thank you. I've been at the Press Democrat for 21 years now, and most of that was in sports. And I wrote about Phil when I was writing sports. I moved over to news, I guess, about 4 years ago, but still remember reporting this story quite well.
Well, that's fabulous. And thank you for, even at the time, for being willing to dig into that, because it's a fascinating guy that we don't really know that much about. I guess back in the day, you know, we're talking the 50s, early 60s, the NBA wasn't quite the, you know, media powerhouse that it is now, right? We don't know all the life story of the seventh guy on the bench like we do now. You know, social media wasn't a thing for sure, but for some, as important as really the first Native American guy to make it in the NBA, that was totally swept under the rug. And you know, at the time, anyway, at least as far as my research goes, and I would welcome you to talk about your research, but I think that's a story that really needs to be spread a little bit further.
No, I agree. And that's why I was so happy to write about it in the first place. And, you know, even in our area, so Santa Rosa, California, we're about an hour north of San Francisco, and it's a city of about 150,000. And we primarily serve the county that Santa Rosa is in. That's Sonoma County. And even my paper, I don't think, had really written much about Phil Jordan, certainly not since his high school days, when he was, scoring a lot of points for Willits High School, which is in Mendocino County. So, we like to play up our local figures, but I feel like even we really hadn't known much about him.
Sure. I can, looking back, and I was able to find a few high school accounts, and as a 6'10" kid, he's probably gonna get the ball a bit, right? So scoring, probably not a big deal. I mean, for him, right? But make a big splash anyway. What can you tell me about? How did you end up picking that, or how did you get assigned that, or how did that story come about? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember, and it was sort of a happy accident, honestly. There was a young man who was from our area. His name was Josh Okoyan. He was from Petaluma, California, and we covered Josh when he was in high school. That was a little before my time covering local sports, but I covered him a bit in college, and afterwards he played in Europe. And really nice young man, and I wrote about some of those experiences. And then Josh, I guess it must have been in 2013 when I wrote about Phil. He signed a 10-day contract with the Dallas Mavericks. So, the NBA, sometimes if they get really shorthanded, they need to bring in a player for a short time until somebody's back from an injury, they'll sign them to a 10-day contract.
Sure.
And so Okoyan signs this 10-day contract, and we wrote about that. And we the way we understood it, he was the first person from Sonoma County ever to play in the NBA, which I found sort of shocking. It's not like we're a huge population center and a real hotbed of pro athletes, but we've certainly had a few NFL athletes. We've had MLB players, we've had pretty high profile swimmers and distance runners, but never an NBA guy. So that kind of fascinated me. And I was just sort of looking around, poking around online. I bet I was spending time on basketballreference.com, which is a great resource, and looking, sort of spread it out a little bit to surrounding counties like Mendocino County, Lake County, Napa County, and was just trying to, confirm that Josh was the first. And that's when I came across Phil Jordan, who was born in Lakeport, which is in Lake County, which is a population-wise a very small county in Northern California. And then he had played at Willits High, which is in Mendocino County, a fairly small town, fairly small high school, and went on to do some pretty great things after that. And so you more or less just stumbled on Phil's story.
Huh. And so when you found that, oh, let's dig into this a little bit more. Or was it like, oh man, I got to go for this? Or how do, I mean, because there's like a personal choice there. It's like, well, is this worth digging into? Is there something there? Tell me about that a little bit. I mean, because
Yeah, sure.
coming
And
from your background, I don't know how you make those decisions. I guess that's really.
no, it's a good observation, because not every interesting fact that we come across becomes a story. Other things have to fall in place. And so in the case of Phil Jordan, I needed a little more than just his numbers that I found on Basketball Reference. I needed to build a little story around it. And I was able to find, a few old stories that mentioned him, and was lucky enough to be able to reach his niece. Her name was Lisa Jordan, and she had played basketball in our area, and she was herself a great high school player. And she had played, I believe, at Texas A&M after that, and had done some coaching. And I was able to connect with Lisa, and I think that she helped me connect with one of Phil's one of his brothers, I believe. And so they honestly didn't have a ton of detail on his life. I think Phil grew up pretty poor, mostly in the home of a single mother, and the family moved around a bit and had difficult circumstances, so there wasn't a richly detailed family history to fill in, but they told me what they could, and it was enough to kind of build a story around.
Okay, great. Well, that whole process, I've spoken to a few authors and that type of thing on the podcast, and the whole research and the why is always fascinating to me. And
No, I love talking about that aspect of my job and what we do at the Press Democrat.
yeah, that's it's fabulous stuff, and particularly for guys like me. I've been looking for more information about Phil Jordan, and any online search kind of stuff, your article is what comes up. There isn't a lot. I get a bunch of stats, but no story, no meat, right? And so again, good job. I mean that's awesome. Thank you for that time and that effort.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I have to say that the stories I love doing are the ones that haven't been told before, and you can really shed a little light on a subject.
Yeah, that's excellent. So, as we're talking about Phil Jordan coming from a little town in Northern California, he ended up here in Washington State in Spokane going to college at Whitworth, now Whitworth University. It was probably Whitworth Agricultural College. I didn't look into that, but it wasn't quite the level that it is now.
Right.
But put together some pretty impactful numbers back in the day, and the whole game of basketball was a little different in the 50s and 60s. It was much slower, more not fast break, not certainly not Showtime, not anything like that, right? So what did you learn about him in college? I mean, if not a whole lot, that's okay too, but I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, what I learned about Phil pretty much at every step, but certainly in college, was he was very good. This is not, a local kid that we tried to elevate in stature to make a good story out of it. He was very good from everything I've heard. And I won't throw all of this in now, but maybe we can talk a little bit later in the interview. But I found out quite a bit about Phil after that story ran because a couple people emailed me who had played with him or who knew him and filled in some of those gaps. And one of those was a college teammate of his, and it sounds like a pretty close friend. That was a gentleman named Bob Gray, who I'd never known before, and I don't think he saw the story until about 4 years after it was published, but emailed me, and he raved about Phil's basketball skills. Said that he could dunk easily with either hand, sort of played above the rim at a time when most players didn't. Apparently, he had a well-developed skyhook, not unlike the shot that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar became famous for in the NBA, and
Yeah.
it sounds like from all accounts that Phil Jordan had just a really feathery touch with the ball, but also powerful enough to play center against, as he later would, guys like Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell.
Right.
So you would ask me about his college days. You're right, it was Whitworth College then. But when at the time I wrote the story, which again was 2013, there was a website, ainsworthsports.com, that ranked athletes in Whitworth history. Phil was number one still at that time. And Whitworth was a smaller school, but had a apparently a very good basketball program, and this gentleman Bob Gray told me that they had some pretty big boosters who donated money to the sports program, and so they actually did offer some scholarships, and they went to the National Small College Championship twice with Jordan on the team, even though he was only there like 2.5 years, I think.
Yeah, that I noticed that too. Was then he left school and went to play on the AAU circuit, which back then was like really, really a major thing. One of my other Indian All-Stars was a basketball player named Jesse Cab Rennick. Was the captain of the 1948 US Olympic team that won the gold medal in London. The NBA wasn't around then, so he played AAU for a lot of, for his post-college career. And that struck me because when I think of AAU, I think my son's sixth, seventh, eighth grade kind of experience. But back then, it was much, much more extensive. And so it wasn't really a step down to make that change. I don't know much about what caused him to make that change, but it was interesting to me that he would, particularly after coming off of two national championship runs.
No, definitely. So there was an article in the Spokane Daily Chronicle at the time that mentioned Whitworth suspending Jordan at one point. And his former teammate, Bob Gray, did tell me that even in college, that Phil had a pretty serious drinking problem. And I think that did contribute. So the way I read it, and I don't know this, but just from the little I found, it sounds like it was a combination of him sort of getting in trouble on the Whitworth team and sort of wearing out his welcome there, but then also being pursued by these AAU teams. And you're right, at that time, college basketball was not as highly developed. The NBA wasn't anything near where it is now. And AAU ball sort of filled in some of the gap there. And the competition was very high. Like, for instance, Phil Jordan's AAU teams also were very good with him starring, and they won a national title. A team in Northern Washington called the Buchan Bakers, I think, is or the you know the Buchan Bakers, probably Buchan. And so apparently, Phil Jordan was employed at the bakery and he played for them, but they won a national title, AAU title. And to win that title, they had to get past Elgin Baylor, one of the all-time NBA greats. He was playing for a team called Westside Ford.
Well, I guess that shows the talent level that was involved in that league or that organization at the time, right? Wow. And an NBA Hall of Famer, playing in that circuit. That's pretty impressive. Wow. Okay. So,
And then, and yeah, so sorry, go ahead.
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so to take it from there, he'd pretty much now succeeded at every level. Minneapolis Lakers drafted Jordan in 1956, and he bounced around a bit in the NBA, played for four teams. I think he had two stints with the Knicks, played a total of seven years, and double digit score, 10.9 points a game, 6.9 rebounds a game for his entire career. And that for NBA stat heads, they'll often break down a player's statistics into what he's doing per 36 minutes, which sort of levels out, like makes it easier to compare a guy playing 15 minutes with a game with a guy playing 28 minutes a game. But when you look at Phil Jordan's 36 minute numbers, his career NBA career, that's 16.1 points a game and 10.1 rebounds. I mean, that's a legitimate player. I think he was a starter for much or most of his time in the NBA. So, a legitimate player.
Yeah, those are solid numbers for a big man today. I mean, unless you're like Shaq or somebody, right? But for you know the I don't want to say run of the mill, but the not quite superstar but solid players, that's right in there, even
It
today.
is. Yeah, no, it definitely is. And he was playing center at 6'10", which 6'10" was taller then than it is now for sure. But as we mentioned before, he's going up against Wilt Chamberlain, who's 7'1", and Bill Russell, who was, I think, 6'10" or 6'11" himself, but obviously just a phenomenal player. So his old teammate Bob Gray insisted that Phil Jordan held his own against those guys, and in fact went to see him play against Chamberlain quite a bit in Philadelphia because Bob Gray had moved back east, and told me that he was convinced that Chamberlain scored at a lower rate against Jordan than he did against most other guys.
Wow. Well, that's a great statement, right? Wow. That's impressive. Okay, so he's made it in the NBA and he's bounced around a little bit, like you said. I thought that was kind of funny that he ended up playing a couple of times with the Knicks. And it wasn't just like a cup of coffee each time. It was a little bit more extended. So they thought enough of him to bring him back around. That was kind of cool.
Sure. Yeah.
So when you talked with his family members, did they say anything about him as a person much? I mean, like you said, they probably didn't give you a whole lot because they didn't have a whole lot of interaction because he was off, playing basketball or whatever. And maybe they came along a little bit when, they were pretty young when he unfortunately passed away. But because he was what, 31 or something like that?
He was 31. Yeah, it was pretty
Yeah.
tragic.
Yeah. But what'd they say about what kind of guy was he? Did they say? I don't.
I mean, I did not get a lot of that. My main contact was his niece Lisa, but
Okay.
he died, I think, 3 years before she was born. So for her, it was really just stories.
Family stories.
And then even Perry, I believe was his brother, filled in a little more for me, but I think the family was a bit splintered. Had good memories of him for sure, but I think they hadn't necessarily stayed close over time. And so I really didn't get a great sense from them about what he was like. But the old teammate I keep referencing, Bob Gray, the college teammate, well, for one thing, Bob insisted that Phil Jordan really did have a problem with alcohol. In fact, I think he told me in one of his emails he thought it eventually ruined him. And so I think because of that, he said Phil, people kind of had to watch out for him because if he came to practice hungover, he could have a real temper. And in fact, Bob told me that there was one practice, and I think Bob was 6'2" and sort of trying to vie for a starting role at Whitworth, but more of a marginal player. And like I said, only 6'2", and was going against Phil Jordan in practice one time, and kind of I guess in Phil's eyes came into him a little too aggressively on a rebound, and he said Jordan chased him up the stairs of the bleacher,
Oh
trying to kill him. But he also said that, that they would kind of sit around in the locker room after practice and have a lot of long talks. And I could tell he was very affectionate toward Phil. And later, when Phil was in the NBA, he would get Bob tickets in New York and Philadelphia for his games. It sounded, in a way, like the game was almost too easy for Jordan when he was in high school and college, that he could just walk out on the court after partying the night before and still sort of dominate.
Yeah, now that you bring that up, it does kind of sound like that could definitely be a contributing factor, right? So I got this in the bag, no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we touched on it, you know, his early passing, his accident, rafting accident, I guess. Was it in your article or was it somewhere else that I heard that he might have been like practicing for some sort of rafting race or something that he was involved with? I don't know if that was in your article, and I'm sorry if I'm putting you on the spot, but
no, that's okay. I did touch on that a bit, and I think some other outlets had when he died. But it was like 10 p.m. at night, and he was on a raft with three other guys, and the raft fell apart. And is that the Puyallup River? It is, right?
Well, that's the spelling, but it's pronounced backwards. It's Puyallup.
Puyallup. Thank you very much.
That's a lot of people make that, particularly people not from the area.
Particularly Californians.
Yeah, make that mispronunciation all the time because that's how it's spelled, but it's Puyallup.
Puyallup. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, there were four guys on a raft, and it was like 10 o'clock at night, but apparently, you know, there was like, I think a raft race they did up there, and there was a lot of speculation that these guys were practicing for the race. And that's certainly the story that his family had all heard and told one another. And one of the saddest parts is, so this raft fell apart 10 o'clock at night, and four men on and three made it to safety on the,
he was
on
the other
the
one.
Side of the river, and but Phil didn't. And I think it took authorities like a month to even find the body. But yeah, 31 years old.
Yeah, tragic. He had been retired for a couple of years at that point out of basketball, I believe. But even at that point, that's 31. That's way too young.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a good question. I don't know exactly how long he'd been out, but I don't think it was long. You know, 7 years in the NBA and after playing AAU and so forth. So yeah, I imagine it was really just 2 or 3 years after his retirement.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy. You know, that's one of those stories where, you know, what if, you know, what if he, what would he have been able to do without the undue influences of, you know, his alcohol problem. But even at that, still 31, there are guys playing for much longer than that. And there probably were then, but one of those what if deals.
Yeah, for sure. And then I don't know if you saw this in the story I wrote, but Phil has that odd connection to Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
It is sort of an inglorious claim to fame, but it definitely was newsworthy at the time. So yeah, let's touch on that. I mean, it's a great story. It doesn't show Phil in the best light, but it's a great story. So let's hear it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, in a way he sort of paved the way for this historic moment. And this is an account that we got from the author, Gary Pomerantz, who wrote an entire book about Chamberlain's 100-point game and what led up to it and how it really sort of changed the NBA in a way and changed the center position. And so that game, that was in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where they just, you know, I think happened to like schedule, it wasn't an exhibition, but almost treating a regular season game as an exhibition and putting it in Hershey. And Phil Jordan would have been the center going up against Chamberlain in that game. And the way Pomerantz wrote it, the night before the game, Jordan arrived at the room of a teammate. They were staying in a hotel and brought a case of beer. And as written in the book, the teammate looked on as Phil pretty much drained the whole case of beer. And then he went out on the town with another teammate, Donnie Butcher. And the next morning he was in terrible shape, and he asked the teammate Butcher to get him some Pepto-Bismol, and the teammate did, and he brought it, but eventually he just said,
Couldn't go.
"Sorry, tell him I can't go. I've got to stay here." So he wasn't able to play that day or that night. And I think the way that I heard the story was, the Knicks really only had one center beyond him, and it was Daryl Imhoff, who I think wasn't even as tall as Phil Jordan and really had no chance against Wilt Chamberlain. And so next thing you know, Wilt scores 100 points, a record that has never been broken, and
yeah,
don't expect anyone to break it anytime soon. Now, I did want to say, I talked to one of Jordan's former NBA teammates, a fascinating guy in his own right named Willie Nalls, Nalls. And he wasn't one of the handful of the very first black players in the NBA, but he was an early black player, and he was quite good. He had played at UCLA. Willie has since passed. I think he died about 5 years after I talked to him for this story, but he was very protective of Phil's memory. And he sort of bristled a little bit at this story of not playing because of the hangover. And he sort of made the argument that no one in 2013 had the right to speculate about what had happened so long ago. So, you know, I will say that not everyone supports that notion, but that was not the only account of Jordan having a drinking problem. So it does seem plausible.
Yeah, that's a kind of an unfortunate thing that I run into in all of this process over time with talking about Native American athletes and some of the challenges that they face. And so that's a kind of a tough part, but it's part of his life, and it's part of something that, you know, moving forward, that people need to be aware of and be able to overcome. And so that's, I think it's important to even tell the, you know, the sordid white underbellies or sordid red underbellies, as we're talking about Native American stuff. That's a little Indian joke, but I think
yeah, and also, and also,
they,
you
they
know,
do have feet of clay a little bit.
Sure. And also, like, don't overlook the fact that Native Americans in Northern California, like a lot of places, were treated so terribly over decades and centuries that people like Phil grew up in very difficult circumstances. You know, Northern California tribes, they didn't have the same experiences like Southwest or Midwest tribes, where, you know, 19th century they're moved hundreds of miles to a distant reservation, but they were certainly displaced and in many cases outright murdered. And in our area, that went on, you know, first half of the 20th century. Even the government was moving Native Americans off of land, putting them on places that weren't always so inhabitable. You know, I know that Phil's father, I think his mother was white, but his father, I read, was from the Wailaki and Nomlaki tribes. And, you know, just as one example, that those tribes were amongst a number that were all sort of thrown together on the Round Valley Indian Reservation, which is in it's either Mendocino or Humboldt County. It's near the border of those two, but a little bit north of where our newspaper is centered. And that the tribes, some of the tribes that were forced onto that land were traditional enemies, and, you know, just put in this terrible situation of fighting over resources. So, you know, I'm not saying any of those factors played directly into Phil Jordan, you know, struggling in his way in life, but his father died when he was very young. His mother raised five children. I don't think they had much money. I think that they bounced around a bit from town to town and home to home. So, don't discount the trauma that goes into some of those decisions.
I know exactly what you're talking about with that, and that's a good point to touch on, and not making excuses, but maybe a little bit of an explanation. In all due reverence to Dan Rather and his big interview show, I'm going to ask you his always wrap-up question is there anything that I didn't ask you that you think I should have?
No, but there is one thing I wanted to bring up that unfortunately I was hoping I could dig up an email to support this and refresh my memory. I couldn't, so I'm thinking it happened in a couple of phone calls at the time, but I remember a few weeks after this story ran, talking to somebody and having a pretty fascinating conversation. This person had, I think, and also a sibling of theirs, or maybe two siblings, had gone through adoption when they were very young. They were sort of removed from their family and adopted, and they had been looking for their birth family and had done as much re had done a bunch of research and had found some names and some locations, but had not been able to fully make the connection. And they came to me thrilled at having seen the story because they believed that they were related to Phil Jordan and his family. And the last I talked to this person, they were in the process of contacting the family. But in the way that they saw it at that time, they were on the verge of being reunited with some of their blood relatives. I don't know whatever became of that, but it was just another kind of interesting, weird element to all this.
I love that. I mean that kind of gets you a little bit. I hope it had a great outcome. That's a
Me too.
great way to wrap this up. I really appreciate it. And
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website, seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sports.historynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sports.historynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.